Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am not Yada, and nor will I try to be, as he is much better at this than I am. Each weekday here on the program, we strive to expose the destructive myths associated with religion and politics, patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news today, the mission is to understand what is actually occurring while predicting how these events will shape our world. Then, during the second hour, we will engage God in His terms through evidence and reason, since His is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in the discussion, is 81-877-300-7645. Yesterday, Craig was talking about how Diane Feinstein said that one of her great successes that she came through with through their NSA surveillance and everything was the uncovering of a man named David Headley, and how this has made it so we're stopping terrorism and such. And when you dig deeper into that story, you just find that that's not necessarily true, that this man went on forever just doing just many different things. Since, what, 2007, somewhere in there? And basically, to continue the story where Craig left off, the Faisalullah, and excuse me, I'm horrible with names, as you will find out throughout these 2 hours. Faisalullah, a Moroccan citizen believed to be Headley's wife, visited India twice. In 2007, she flew to Mumbai from Karachi, and stayed with Headley in the Taj Mahal Hotel in Oberoi Trident, both of which were targets in the 2008 Mumbai attacks. In 2008, she crossed from Pakistan via the road at Wagai and spent time in Manali. Since this time, Utala and Headley have divorced. Indian investigators were surprised at how easily Headley had obtained a visa to enter India, a process that is extremely difficult for Pakistani nationals. His passport, his new Western and English-sounding name, and the fact that the passport and his visa application made no mention of his prior name or his father's nationality made it easy for him to obtain an Indian visa from the Indian consulate in Chicago. He falsely stated on his visa application that his father's name was William Headley and that his own name at birth was Headley, a claim that was difficult to refute since the U.S. passport, unlike the Indian one, does not provide the father's name and does not require endorsements on name changes by the passport holder. That seems like a giant mistake on our part. Once you want to know if somebody changed their name, but I digress. Indian government officials said that if the name change had been noted on his passport, Indian immigration officials would have been alerted during his multiple visits to India. So, basically what I'm reading is, through all this surveillance that they did, they never once found any of this stuff to be, like, weird, or that you know, this should be something that should be looked into. While the government officials in India cite full cooperation by U.S. authorities, the opposition parties and others in India have demanded explanations of why Headley was allowed to travel freely for years between India, Pakistan, and the U.S., and why he was working undercover for the DEA. So this person was there for the Mumbai attack, or his wife was there for the Mumbai attacks. He was moving around the country, the three countries of India, Pakistan, and the U.S., all while working undercover for the DEA. Well, now we know why he wasn't under the surveillance program. He was working for us. Some Indian analysts have speculated that David Headley was a double agent for the Central Intelligence Agency that had infiltrated LET, an accusation denied by the CIA. As soon as Headley was arrested in Chicago, the Indian media had a barrage of questions for the government about him, whose answers were slow in coming. Among other questions, Indian investigators wanted the FBI to share its tapes of Headley's communications with his Pakistani handlers to match with the voices taped on cell phones during the 2008 Mumbai attacks. Following intense coverage and speculation in the Indian press, U.S. Ambassador Timothy J. Romer told reporters in New Delhi that the United States is working at the highest level to provide India access to Hedley, even as it is passing along answers to questions in real time. So speculation is now that he worked for the DEA. He was working with the CIA to infiltrate LET. This doesn't look good for us. I believe LET is Lashkar-e-Taiba, something like that, if I remember reading correctly. Anyways, news reports in October 2010 revealed that the U.S. authorities had much advanced knowledge about Hedley's terrorist associations and activities. Hedley's American and Moroccan wives had contacted American authorities in 2005 and 2007, respectively, complaining about his terrorist activities. The Moroccan wife told reporters that she had even shown the U.S. Embassy in Islamabad photographs of their stay at the Taj Mahal in Mumbai, warning them that he was doing something on behalf of Lashkar-e-Taiba. There you go, I was right. Sweet. It's good to see that we haven't changed, that our government hasn't changed their mode of operations. As, I mean, obviously we were funding terrorism back then, since we've known about this since, 2005, 2007. It was good to see that another country had given us the information, since that just recently happened in Boston when Russia told us to, hey, watch these guys. And we just decided to blow them off as well, which is a little bit sad. And these are the people that we're putting in charge of our security, which frightens me even more because they are obviously inept. Continuing on with the story, since Hedley's guilty plea, Home Minister P. Chidambaram was repeatedly asked why the U.S. cannot extradite Hedley to India. Analysts and some media outlets have speculated that the United States conspired to have Hedley work undercover despite knowledge that he was involved in terrorism. In June 2010, U.S. National Security Advisor James Jones announced that India's National Investigation Agency, NIA, has been given access to Hedley. The investigation has confirmed that Lashkar-e-Taiba terrorists carried out the Mumbai attack under the guidance of Pakistan's Inner Services Intelligence, the ISI. Hedley stated that the ISI was engaged with the Lashkar commanders responsible for the Mumbai deaths and injuries at each and every stage of the plot. Hedley mentioned that Major Samir Ali, Major Iqbal, and Major Harun Ashik, who are serving officers of the Pakistan Army, collaborated with the LET. It's good to see corruption doesn't just follow us. Hedley was also spoken of how post 2611, ISI wanted LET to disown the Mumbai attack in order to prevent global attention to the terror group. Pakistan considers it to be an important strategic asset to be used against India. With Ajmal Kassab as the only terrorist captured, ISI wanted to blame the terrorist act on Al-Qaeda, which is another group that we have great connections with. It prepared a list of 4 to 5Al-Qaeda figures who were to be projected as the conspirators. The plan, however, did not work due to resistance from Lashkar leaders, particularly Zakir Rahman Lakhvi. I told you I'm horrible with names. On January 24th, 2013, Hedley was convicted by the United States Federal Court in Chicago, Illinois, for his part in the 2008 Mumbai attacks. Based on the recommendation of prosecutors in the case, he was sentenced to 35 years in prison. The judge in the case, Harry Lennon-Waver, these names get no easier, what's going on here, stated that the sentence was sufficient to put him under lock and key for the rest of his life, and that he would never be in a position again to commit a terrorist attack. However, others, including survivors of the attack, have been critical of the sentencing, saying that the length of the sentence was an appalling dishonor and that Hedley has no right to live. Headley could have faced up to the maximum sentence of life imprisonment, but got a lighter sentence due to his cooperation with the U.S. federal prosecutors, specifically in providing testimony against those who plotted to attack a Danish newspaper. Well, so the Patriot Act has been signed for since just after 9/11, what, 2004, I believe. I'll have to double check that, but they've been doing these surveillances since 2004. This guy's been doing stuff since what, right around then, and then some, because he was convicted for the Mumbai attacks, which, so that had to be, you know, 2005, 2007, and they're saying that this is what keeps us safe. If this is what keeps you safe, you're going to have, if you think that all the government wants to do is keep you safe through this program, I don't think you're thinking clearly. Who controls what they search for, or who decides what they search for? When Hitler initially took over Germany, he didn't just outright start getting rid of the Jews. He worked towards it, and then he changed things around, and he positioned things to make it look like they were what they should go after. Who's to say something like that doesn't happen here? Who determines what gets searched for? And I know during the news segment I heard the very first story, and then I, like every day, I stopped listening to it, where Obama said that these things are, you know, overrun by courts, you know, they get overwatched by courts and stuff like that. But last I checked, the NSA order was signed by a super secret court. Well, what's this, you know, who controls the super secret court? Who determines that, who gets appointed to a super secret court? And I'll talk more about it when we get back, but the track record of the Supreme Court lately has been absolutely atrocious, and they've walked all over a lot of our rights. This is Shattering Myths. I'm Scott, and we will be back after this message. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We were talking about how the government is trying to say that they're only looking out for our security, and they're trying to avoid these terrorist attacks. And yesterday, I believe the leader of the NSA said something along the lines of that they've only monitored 1,000 calls, and of those 1,000 calls, 300 calls, they felt needed further investigating. And of those 300 calls, 50 of them have thwarted a terrorist attack. If those are the numbers we're looking at, obviously this is a great program, but I don't believe them. They have a long enough track record that I feel like if you just look at their track record, nobody should believe them. Continuing on with the Feinstein story with Headley, her greatest success was this Headley fellow who happened to be working for us. So, but anyways, continuing on with now we get to some of her and what she says. These programs are within the law, the Democrat from California told ABC's This Week. And Representative Mike Rogers, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, told ABC, "The inflammatory nature of the comments does not fit with what Diane and I know this program really does. The instances where this has produced good, has disrupted plots, prevented terrorist attacks, is all classified," said Rogers, Republican. He's a Republican from Michigan. "That's what's so hard about this." Clapper's office declassified some details of the programs, which it said were conducted under the authorities widely known and discussed and fully debated and authorized by Congress. U.S. officials said earlier that phone call data isn't looked at unless investigators sense a tie to terrorism, and only then on the authority of a judge. Officials say analysts are forbidden from collecting the internet activity of American citizens or residents Even when they travel overseas and Obama tried to reassure Americans about the programs Friday, saying nobody is listening to your telephone calls. This makes me think of another thing is with Snowden. I talked to Craig about it, or Yada about it, and he talked to he mentioned it to you, is that they're only listening to our enemies, and terrorism is they're surveilling people to try and fight terrorism, and all Snowden did was tell us that they are doing that, and then they got all upset and they're going to try and charge them with treason. Treason is helping the enemy, last I knew. So if all he did was tell us that they're watching us and then confirm it, and then they came out and they confirmed it and they're all angry at them, I can only assume that they think that we're part of the enemies, which would make sense. Anyways, Clapper's office said PRISM was created in 2008, targets foreign targets located outside the United States, and gets reviewed by the administration, Congress, and judges. And Rogers told reporters Sunday that there is not a target on Americans. So then why wouldn't they tell? Why are they so upset that we now know they're doing it? They're hiding something, and now they're trying to backtrack, cover it up, much like they've always done. But Glenn Greenwald, the lead author of the Guardian pieces, told ABC's This Week that the articles show the NSA hasn't leveled with members of Congress who have expressed concerns about the scope of electronic surveillance. He said Americans need an open, honest debate about whether that's the kind of country that we want to live in. Well, after the 9/11 attacks, everybody was so, just willing to give up their rights, for their protection. And this is where that gets you. If you rely on other people to protect you, that's, you have to deal with the consequences that come, and that's this. I mean, if you don't want people to spy on you and all that, then you have to take responsibility for your actions and your surroundings, which I'm perfectly willing to do. I'm happy with that. I mean, then I only have myself to blame. And, in the second hour we talk about another guy that, keeps pretty good tabs on his family. These are the things that the American people have a right to know, said Greenwald, a lawyer and civil liberties advocate. The only thing being damaged is the credibility of political officials and the way they exercise power in the dark. Colorado Democratic Senator Mark Udall, who has long called for greater transparency in how the government collects data on Americans, said the legal authority should be reopened for debate after last week's disclosures. That's a good call, Mr. Udall. Anyways, we've reached the end of the segment. We will go to another commercials. Hopefully they're decent because I don't actually listen to them. Anyways, I will see you on the other side of the break. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Minutes. My name is Scott. I'm filling in for Yada today. Apparently he gets a lot of emails saying more Scott. And, well, now you got more Scott. And I hope you're happy. So, all right, we were talking about, I mentioned that she's saying all this is a success of the Patriot Act and the NSA. Feinstein saying this is the great success of the NSA surveillance and everything like that. And I mentioned that I thought it was like 2004 when the Patriot Act was signed into effect. It's actually 2001, which obviously, I mean, it makes me sound like I spaced that off. But it was 2001, and in 2005 there were a bunch of there was a bunch of parts that were supposed to stop. They were supposed to expire. And one of those things was authority to intercept wire, oral, and electronic communications relating to terrorism, and the authority to intercept wire, oral, and electronic communications relating to computer fraud and abuse offenses. Those were supposed to expire on December 31st, 2005, as per the U.S. Patriot Act. USA Patriot Act, which is a backronym standing for Uniting and Strengthening America by Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Intercept and Obstruct Terrorism. Clever. And so obviously, if they wrote into the bill that those things were supposed to stop, and now they're continuing to go, and our current president said that, you know, we had to cut down on these things, and yet they've been ramped up during his terms. People should really be asking what's going on here. Where is this leading to? What's their end game? They've started to take people that have money and have worked hard to get their money, and they're taking them and they're villainizing them. And again, this is what I see. And these are what I think, and they're villainizing them, saying they're not paying their fair share, they're not doing this, they're not doing that. There also seems to be another thing brewing in the background there, and eventually this all has to come to a head. And I'm not, obviously, Yada is far smarter than I, because he could probably tell you where he sees things like that, to where he could tell you where he sees it going and what he sees happening. I see that eventually there's going to be civil unrest, I guess I would say. But the Colorado senator, Democratic Senator Mark Udall, who has long called for greater transparency in how the government collects data on Americans, said the legal authority should be reopened for debate after last week's disclosures. Maybe Americans think this is okay, but I think the line has been drawn too far forwards, or too far towards we're going to invade your privacy versus we're going to respect your privacy, Udall told CNN's State of the Union. Yeah, I don't really know who this Udall guy is, but that's a pretty astute comment. Not really, that's kind of sarcasm on my part. Udall is a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He and Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon, have criticized the scope of the classified programs that allow the collections of Americans' phone records, but have been limited in what they could say publicly. Udall told CNN that claims that the monitoring has thwarted terrorist attacks are overblown. Well, at least he seems to be being truthful about things. It's unclear to me we've developed any intelligence through the metadata program that's led to the disruption of plots that could have been attained through other means. Udall said, pushing back on assertions by both administration officials and Rogers that a specific plot was stopped by using the massive collection of phone records. You want to stop terrorism, and Yada says this all the time. This is something I really agree with. You want to stop terrorism? Stop creating terrorists by going to other countries and bombing them and killing their moms, their dads, their sisters, their friends. We have this arrogance about us that and I say we because I'm born here in America, that we have to be in everybody's business, and that everybody has a right to do what they want and things like that. And when we do this, we eliminate reason, because first, not every place deals with religions like we do. Here they seem to be put on a pedestal, which is absolutely crazy as well. But because we don't question people's religions here, they feel that that same thing should apply throughout the world. Whereas when you start telling people that they can't question things, you take away their ability to see something that they don't like, and rather than saying, or they see something weird, and rather than saying, hey, what's going on over there, they think, well, that's just that guy. He's just doing his own thing. I can't say anything. Politically correct. you know, one of my biggest issues I have in the world today is the thought of responsibility. People say they just do things and it's not their fault. When I was growing up, it was the big thing was did your parents not hug you enough? The two brothers from California, the Menendez brothers, maybe, where, you know, they didn't get hugged enough, or they didn't get told that their parents, you know, loved them. I guess with my parents, I've always had the thought of, you know, they always made sure that whenever I needed them, they were there. And my dad didn't, he's not a big person on, you know, showing signs of affection. But I've never in my mind, every time I've messed up in my life, it's been me messing up, because it's me. And people have lost that. This person doesn't, now it's created to where this person doesn't have money because this person does have money. How does that make any sense? You know, they're not paying their fair share. Well, I always use Romney as my example. He paid $3 million in taxes. $3 million in taxes. I will never pay $3 million in taxes in my life. In my entire life. Not to mention how many jobs did he save or create, things along those orders. If you just want somebody to pay more, you're going to run into other issues, because why would you keep working if you have to spend more money? If you're not getting the same return, what advantage does somebody that invests in a company have to keep investing his money? Anyways, I went off on a tangent again. I apologize. The Guardian reported that Snowden grew up in North Carolina and Maryland. He joined the Army in 2003, but was discharged after breaking both his legs in a training accident. He never completed a high school diploma, but learned computer skills at a community college in Maryland. I believe he got his GED. So that's how he got into the college. He started his career as a security guard for the NSA facility at the University of Maryland, then went to work for the CIA and Internet Security in 2009. He got the first of several jobs with private contractors that worked with the NSA. In a statement issued Sunday afternoon, Booz Allen said Snowden had worked for the company for less than 3 months. Reports that he had leaked American secrets were shocking, and if true, represents a grave violation of the code of conduct and core values of our firm. It's American secrets from Americans, apparently. That's kind of weird. Snowden told The Guardian that he left for Hong Kong on May 20th without telling his family or his girlfriend what he planned to do. I do not expect to see home again, he told the paper, acknowledging the risk of imprisonment over his actions. You can't come up against the world's most powerful intelligence agency and not accept the risk, he said. If they want to get you, over time they will. Well, that's extremely true. I believe I also saw another quote by him that said, let's see, what was it? This country is worth dying for. That couldn't be a farther statement from the truth. Your life is the only one you have. This country is not what it wants. It's not what people make it out to be. The idea and the concept behind it is great. You know, people, they get along with their government, and the government, you know, only wants the best for the people. But there's not a government in the world that will do that. There's not a religion in the world that will do that. Governments want control. That's why we broke away from the kingship. It's why when we hear stuff like this, the people that are using their brains think, you know, wow, they're watching us. Why are they collecting all this data? What are they trying to get? And it's why everybody should question things like that. This country is not what it should be. and it never will be, sadly, because I'll probably live here for most of my life. But when people don't question things like this and they blindly follow and they blindly just let these things happen, what's that say about the society in general? I look at Yah and stuff like this, and like when that was about a year ago, right around a year ago is when I first heard about Yahweh. And when I looked at the different things that were being said and how they were truthful and how they were things that you could see, and things were becoming more and more true. How do you turn away from that? How do you deny that? How do you say, you know, oh, I don't want to, I'd rather believe in zombie Jesus than this. I mean, these are the questions that you have to ask, and you shouldn't look to a government to protect you, and or anything like that. And when you do, you lose a gift that was given to you. We'll be right back after these commercials. Welcome back to the final segment of the first hour of the program. Larry, my friend Larry, called me, and he's going to join me in this time. Last segment, Larry, I was talking about how you can't look to other people to for your protection, and this was brought on due to the Snowden story and how he basically said that he didn't want to live in a society that does these sort of things and live in a world where everything I do and say is recorded. That
even like 1984.
Yeah. 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 Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got a couple of things to say about that. That's, you know, that's why we, you know, I mean, we have a Second Amendment, excuse me, or at least did have. I'm not sure if we still do.
Well, give the Supreme Court time. they'll make it so
yeah.
We don't.
Well, you know, that brings on yet another point. You know, you see a lot of more. There are more people out there, and they're getting more nervous and more nervous about government regulation, government intrusion, the scope and size of government. I mean, if it doesn't bother you that the government knows what's going on inside your home with microphones and everything else, then you know, it doesn't bother you. It does bother me. There was a time when people didn't fear the government because we thought there were checks and balances. But due to, you know, some of the more recent Supreme Court decisions I've seen,
inaction
of the Congress, I no longer believe there's checks and balances.
No, I don't believe there is at all. Especially since you get congressmen saying that, you know, we had no idea this was going on. Well, how's that possible?
Well, you get, not only that, but the CEOs of these companies that are sharing information and so forth, what do? Well, they come up and they lie to Congress, don't they? And then when they're caught, you know, sharing this very information that they claim that they're not sharing, does anything happen to them?
No. Nothing.
Now, what do you suppose if you sat up there and lied to Congress and but a Secretary of State can, an Attorney General can.
Well, they have Holder investigating himself.
Yeah, I'm well aware of that. You know, one of the things that I would have thought would have stuck in people's minds, but there's, you know, there's this deluge of scandals. And it comes out like a drip to the point we've got a 35,000-gallon swimming pool now. And if you know, how, I don't know how a government accidentally trains Las Zetas, as an example, you know, the leading drug cartel in Mexico. I mean, these people are ruthless. They slaughter children. They behead people. How we train them, give them ranger training, and how then we accidentally give them weapons, and then they accidentally launder their drug money through through American CFR banks like Wells Fargo as an example that was caught laundering $373 billion. Now, you know, you launder that kind of drug money, okay, and you're getting 10 or 20 points on $373 billion, the $200 million fine they paid is what? It's less than significant. It's insignificant. And so, you know, this is where we find ourselves today. We have a government that really has no regard for the people whatsoever. That's how it looks to me.
Well,
we're going to tell you, and that's going to be the end of it.
Snowden was given, he gave us the information that they were doing this, mm-hmm. and then he was branded a traitor.
Yeah, well, what was... this is what I want to know. I mean, Snowden was not a nuclear scientist or anything, was he?
No, he was a technical assistant.
He was a snoop.
Yeah.
And you know, what is he going to do? Train the Chinese or the Russians in a better way to listen to their own people? And don't spies already use countermeasures? In other words, you know, a spy doesn't get on the phone and openly talk about some secret unless he's trying to spill out disinformation.
If he's a spy, he's the worst spy ever. He gave us his real name.
I'm just saying. Let's assume. Now, forget the if he's a spy, he's not a spy. But let's say that you are a spy and you do work for the Chinese intelligence agency or something. And you know, China, of course, is our largest trading partner now, I believe. In fact, we take $21 billion of the bailout money and move GM to China.
I couldn't agree with you more. All right, that ends the hour. We will be back after the news break, and we will move on to the Ten Commandments that Yada was talking about yesterday. The next hour is the one that scares me the most, so I look forward to it. I'll talk to you guys then.